come in. It's good to see you. It's going to be a little strange. It's kind of like you're stepping in on a little bit of a family meeting that's been going on for a few weeks here. Hopefully it still makes sense once you work to kind of pick up where we're at, the rhythm of things. But that's just the way it is sometimes. A couple weeks ago when I was up here preaching, I was all about trying to the idea of that we are sometimes consumed with one or more forms of, capitals, resources that God has entrusted to us. We are sometimes addicted to hoarding it. And really, my only ask was that you just admit where it is in your life that you're tempted to try to grab on and hold and keep to yourself instead of releasing. I admitted that for me, it was often my relational capital, my relationships with other people that I wanted to kind of hold to myself and not release so that I could continue to feel important. And only me. Every time you needed to go through me to get to the people I know. So I stood up here and I said, "Hi, I'm Andy and I'm addicted to, I'm sometimes consumed by hoarding my relational capital. I don't know what it was for you. And you might not have been here, and that's fine, but just let that play in your mind. If there's one thing that you want to kind of hold on to, and I mentioned that, if you're normal, if you're just kind of a normal person in our culture, it often has to do with money. That's why Jesus talked about it so much. Things haven't changed in 2,000 years. The currency, the thing that we use to exchange for stuff, is really hard to let go of, and we want to hold on to it. Last week, Chris started to talk about, having a heart turned towards generosity and being kind of the first step towards changing things. He used a couple stories that I want to come right back to and use that as a stepping off point, as a jumping off point towards bringing this back around. We're going to have one more week on this, but it's really actually going to be more about sort of celebrating what God has done in our life through these, first 5-6 weeks. So we're going to let up just a little bit. This has been a challenging series, and this is going to be no different. The truth is, we come here, you might have another touch point or two in the week, and you might do a small group or something like that, but really, when it comes down to it, we allow God very little access to our lives compared to the amount that the culture around us has access to our life, forces its way into our life. How can we change that? Last week, Chris talked about the story of Zacchaeus and how Zacchaeus is not, he's not the kind of tax collector that's honorable, follows the rules. It's sometimes hard to understand why they were so hated in that day and in Jesus' day and age. But the truth is they were usually corrupt, usually hated, usually were some of the most insidious members of the society because they cheated people out of their extra. And so here's Zacchaeus. Something is going on in his life where he wants to encounter, or he's curious enough, or we don't really know exactly what is going on in Zacchaeus' life, but he's curious enough to want to get a look at Jesus. And so, it says he's short, but I'm also guessing he's up in that tree a little bit to hide so that he doesn't, maybe hopefully people don't see him because he knows what people think of him. And then here comes Jesus walking down, and he sees Zacchaeus in the tree, right? He stops. He looks up. He says, "I'm coming to your house." It seems a little weird to us to just, stop, tell some stranger that I'm going to come to your house. Interesting thing is that would have been a real blessing, actually, for a rabbi, a teacher, if they were to just, "I'm going to come to your house." And that would have been seen as a great blessing. "I'm going to come and bless your house with my presence." A little weird in our culture, right? We wouldn't normally, impose ourselves on that, but that would have been, it would have been seen as a real, extraordinary, unbelievable favor. Zacchaeus, this person who's used to being, you know, shunted, despised, ignored, hated. And during that time, at some point in time during that dinner, Zacchaeus is totally changed, right? He's completely and utterly changed to the point where in Luke 19, 8 through 9, Zacchaeus says, meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord. Half my wealth, 50% there. And if I've cheated anyone on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. And Jesus responds, salvation has come to this home today. So Zacchaeus gives 50% plus, you know, like is paying reparations for anything he did wrong. And Jesus says, salvation. So are we to assume that 50% is what it takes to earn salvation? Is that what's going on here? Probably not, right? But then there's another, just like in the previous chapter, we also have this story about Jesus who's teaching, he's there, he's with some people, and this guy who's very religious, he's got it all together, comes to Jesus. He's done everything. He knows he's done everything he needs to be right with God. And I think he comes to Jesus like, everyone's kind of paying attention to this guy over here. You know, I'm going to show everyone up. So he goes to Jesus, he's like, hey, Jesus, you know, I've done everything I need to do. And, just in case, like, is there anything else I need? What else do I need to do to be saved? Probably expecting Jesus to say, oh, wait, you, sir, are in. Well done. I mean, he probably expects Jesus to start the slow golf clap, you know, like point all attention on him. You ever done that? You ever like know you're like you've got it right? And I mean, I don't know if I can remember doing this once in a while. I was not this kind of student normally, but once in a while, I would be pretty sure that I had everything right, and I wanted a little bit of praise. So I'd be like, hey, "Teacher, is this right?" You know, knowing that it was completely and utterly right, and I wanted a little bit of praise. That was maybe twice. I don't know. Not very often. I wasn't that kind of student. And so this guy, but Jesus says, you know what? No, what you have to do is give everything you have and take it, sell it, give it to the poor. So this guy had done everything, but he also had a lot of wealth. And the thing that Jesus says, you don't have to do anything else. No, like, you know, rules that you have to keep. No more things. Just take your wealth and give it away. So is that it? Is Jesus saying like we have to give to you and me? Is it somewhere between 50% and everything? Is that it? And there's another part where he comes to the Pharisees, and it's actually one of the more gentle. He usually has a lot to say to the Pharisees, but there's this one time where he goes to the Pharisees. He's like, you give a tenth of your, you know, of your earnings, you give it away, and that's good. You know, he had some other things to say, but you know, like so he's but he sort of praised the Pharisees for giving away a tenth. That's good. That's good. So which is it? I think a lot of times Jesus talks about money a lot, and we just want to know, like, just tell me what to do, right? Can you just tell me what to do? Just tell me the number, which is it? Is it 10%? Is it 50%? Do I have to, like, give it all away? Is that what it really, really takes? I think this comes from a want, a need, a desire to sort of know what's my fair share. I think oftentimes when we're looking at, you know, trying to live a proper life or to do the right thing or to live in community, we're just like we're very often concerned with what's my fair share. What are you doing? I don't want to do, you know, like more than my, like what's fair. Sometimes we're concerned with that, overly concerned with it. The thing is, you know, in those examples and throughout the Bible and the New Testament, and like I said 2 weeks ago, oftentimes it's always the thing that we want to hold on tightest to, the thing that has our heart in its grips, the thing that we are consumed with and we need to be free from. Is the thing we're supposed to just flip on its head and do the opposite. Let's do the opposite. If we want to hold our money, if our natural inclinations want to be consumed and addicted to it, give it away. If you want to really gain your life, lose it, right? Like those are the paradoxes that Jesus is always saying. The thing is that throughout the Bible, what we see is when people get free, like really free, like Zacchaeus, living under this weight of having things but having no life. Like when you finally get free, when God gets a hold of their lives, they get generous. Whatever that means, like they just, sometimes it's 50%, just give it away. Sometimes Jesus is saying, in order for you to be generous, you need to take everything and give, and then you need to come and follow me. That's what it's going to take for you. And not just, you know, like people get generous when they're free, not just a little bit. But the thing that we can learn from that, the thing that we can sort of get in our heads is that generous people in the Bible, in the story, in the book that we follow, generous people are changed people. And so if you're sitting here, if we are sitting here week after week and we're not trending towards more and more generosity, then we're probably not being changed. Because that much is clear. The specific amount that we, you know, like that's unclear. Like somewhere between 10 and 100. I don't know. Like that's unclear. But the one thing that is clear is that changed people are generous. And so if we find ourselves coming and sitting through messages like this and just kind of with an increased temptation to sort of cross our arms or be cynical or shut down, then we're probably not allowing God to work in our lives. At best, this becomes just a social gathering. At worst, we're consumed with some sort of religious habit. Generous people are changed people. I hear objections sometimes, though, and I maybe even have been guilty of encouraging it from time to time because, you know, we want to say that it's not, you know, especially in our tradition, the Reformed tradition, right? We believe in justification by faith, not by works, right? So we want to avoid any sort of connection between do this and you're saved. We want to run away, deny that. That is not what we want to say, right? So oftentimes, I mean, they can be like, well, God doesn't really need my money, right? God doesn't need my money. Like in one sense, like if you read, like I've read the Bible several times through. I've been to seminary. I studied all the theology. I understand God's sovereignty. I understand that God is sovereign and independent from creation and doesn't technically need your money. But when we say it like that, like God doesn't need my money, that's dangerously and it's very close to being unbiblical, unhealthy, and untrue. Let me put it this way. For those of you who happen to be parents, I'm a parent, two daughters right here. I would never say, you would never allow me to say and still keep my job, that God doesn't need me. My kids don't need me to be their father. I wouldn't say that, right? You wouldn't allow me to say that and say like, oh yeah, that makes sense. God will take care of your kids. You don't need to be. Your kids don't need you to be their father. In one sense, God doesn't, we could say, this is maybe one for everyone. We would never say, God doesn't need me to take care of my body, right? Maybe we would. It's a whole lot easier, right, than to worry about health and wellness and what I put in my body and things like that. But we wouldn't say that because we don't really believe that we can just do whatever we want and live in a way and treat our body in whatever way we want and then, like, pray really hard for all the consequences to go away. I mean, some things are out of our control, right? But that is not, like, that is not the attitude we would take. In the same way, we really ought not to say, God doesn't need my money. Because it's not that God does. It's that you and I need to be free from money. In the same way, my kids really do need me to be their father. That's God's plan for taking care of kids. Parents. It's God's plan for taking care of the whole body, for taking care of the world. Generous people. I've heard it said that for the problems of the world, it's kind of like God says, I have a plan. I have a plan. My plan is you. And there is no other plan. Right? When Jesus came, he invested 3 years. He took 12 guys, 3 years. He invested, poured his whole life into those guys and said, go change the world. Very small amount of the time that he was alive and walking on this earth, really, comparatively, devoted all into these people and then said, go, change the world. My plan is actually the people that I've created. It's the same way in the garden. God puts Adam and Eve, there's a lot of work to be done, puts Adam and Eve in charge and said, take care. And still today, God uses the people of God to participate in the work of the kingdom. God's rule and reign extends as God, as we, as the people of God, join with God and participate in the kingdom, in the rule and reign of God. And so here's what it is. It's if generous people are changed people, generous communities, collections of generous people, generous communities change the world. That's the way it's meant to be. And it starts kind of here among us. In Acts 1, it says, Jesus says to his disciples, it says, you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you. And you will be my witnesses, telling people about me everywhere. In Jerusalem, where you are, first where you are, and then in Samaria, the suburbs, and then to the ends of the earth. Ohio. Is there anything? Later on in Acts, it says, all the believers were united in heart, in mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own. So that they shared everything they had. And the apostles testified powerfully to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's great blessing was upon them all. There were no needy people among them, because those who owned land or houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give to those in need. I think a lot of times we read these passages and think, that's good for like a short amount. I don't know if we can base a whole life or a whole community or I just don't. Or else we think, well, if I knew that the money I gave would go like straight to like feeding someone who's hungry. I've done this a lot, actually. If I knew it went straight to like, you know, people who need shoes, if they would just get shoes, you know, like, and I don't want it going to infrastructure overhead, or if I just knew it went all to the people who really needed it. That sounds good. And I've even said that from time to time until, you know, in fact, one of my favorite ways of, we don't have much of a savings account, but I do have some money in a savings account called Kiva, which is actually then loaned out to people around the world who need, you know, a little bit of money to get a, you know, chicken coop or something going on. And I used to loan that out. And every time like a loan gets repaid, you get to loan it out again and things. It's really cool. But every time you do a loan, they ask you just a little bit of money, like to donate to Kiva itself. For the longest time, for years actually, I would never do that. I've never, like, you know, because that costs something. I don't actually get that back, right? And then I started to think to myself, like, what would happen if the infrastructure wasn't there? What would happen? How would that money actually get there? How would people be like, you know, I mean, it just wouldn't work. What would happen if we just load, if I know exactly what would happen, you know, like, you know, remember when earthquake, devastating earthquake with Haiti, like tons of ships were loaded with food and just like driven into the harbors of Haiti. And it just sat there rotting. Because there was no infrastructure. And Carrie, if you want to learn about it, like, Carrie can tell you all about, you know, like, the thing is, it's the same story going on in here. Like, the apostles, the community, like, if I think a lot of people think, well, if I could just have control over exactly what, you know, or what does it go towards that I give? Or all these sorts of things that are on our minds. The thing is, we want, it's sort of like, you ever seen those, you go in, somebody's raising money for some cause or something like that, and it's like a thermometer filling up? You ever seen those? That's a good picture of how we think about this. Like, if we just throw a bunch of money at a problem, fills up, and then problem solved, right? When actually the whole point in us talking about generosity, of us giving and being a generous people so that we are changed, not necessarily so a problem is solved. And so instead of thinking about giving or this whole idea like a thermometer filling up, maybe we start to think about it as a thermostat that adjusts who we are, where our heart is. Instead of a thermostat, it's a thermometer that adjusts the position of your heart. Because Jesus says, right, this is a very familiar passage, Jesus says, for wherever your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Wherever you put your money, your stuff, your time, that might be your treasure. Wherever you put your treasure, that's where your heart will be also. So if you got a, you know, you got a fancy car, right? You know this. I mean, you got to take care of it. You got to wash it. Some part of your life is taken up by that thing. Now, you know, we need cars to get around in our culture. That's just the way it is. Like I said 2 weeks ago, it's not that you can't have nice things. They can't have you. And the thing is, if your treasure is tied up in something, your heart will be there. There's no way around it. Wherever you put your treasure, there your heart will be also. When you give, your resources, your treasure, whatever their treasure is, when you give it, you're saying, I want my heart to go there, God. If you don't choose the things that God cares about, that's God's going to let you put your treasure there, and your heart's going to be there. But when we choose to be generous, we live in a generous community, and we give to that community, give up control of it, then we're saying, I want my heart to go towards the things that you care about, God. Giving is a thermostat that adjusts the position of our heart. So this whole series is not about telling you what to do. It's not leaving up to a declaration that you must give 10% of your income. Problem solved. Move on. We're talking about treasure in a much wider sense. We're talking about our heart and the position of it and where our treasure goes and what we have control over. But the thing is that when God gets a hold of our lives, this is the one thing that's clear. Over and over again, the details are always unclear. As much as the gospel talks about money and its influence in our lives or treasure and things like that, all that is a little bit murky, but the one thing that is clear is that when God gets a hold of people's lives, they are changed and they get radically generous. We know. I don't have to break it down for you. We know that where we put our treasure, our heart goes with it. Ultimately, we don't want you to just come here and sit every week. I don't want to just come and sit here for an hour or so. Might go a little longer. Each week, and while the world around us gets untold amounts of hours to influence our life and work on us becoming good consumers that power the economy, wherever we put our treasure, that is where our heart will be too. That's what we're saying. And by saying that I'm going to take some of my treasure and I'm going to put it here, God. I'm going to invest it in this community, this church, this covenant family of God. We are allowing God to adjust the position of our heart. The more time and resources, the more treasure we give to God's kingdom, the more of our heart is there. It's like a form of immunity against the temptation to be consumed by other things. And so if you look at this sheet of paper, which I don't know if everyone got, there should be some more. Was there any more, Matt? No? Gave them all away? All right. If you look at it, it's really just a bunch of examples. It's creative. You sort of run out of ideas, basically. But if you have other ideas for, you know, either getting free from debt or getting more generous, or like, and it's any way we could possibly think to respond to the 5-6 weeks that we've been talking about being consumed by things and getting free from that. And probably the two most normal things of treasure that we have is money and time. And so there's a couple, you know, there's a bunch of different ways there. So if you take it, fold it like this, you got money, you got time. I have the advantage of, you know, knowing this was coming, of thinking about this a little bit, you know. And I've been asking myself, I've been praying, you know, Gina and I have been, this is actually really interesting timing, really interesting. This year, you know, Gina and I don't have a lot of money. The salary that I get from the branch doesn't even cover the sort of food, shelter, health insurance, you know, those sorts of things. Normally, I have another gig, another job that like meets that. And last year actually was really great. Got free from some debt and stuff. But this year, for whatever reason, like that is not happening. Some things have come up, but it would always mean trading the investment that we're making in making disciples as a family. The one thing we have of extreme value is who God's made us to be, our family. A family dedicated wholeheartedly to making disciples here in amongst this family. Disciples who make disciples who make disciples. That's what we have. And we have been giving it like crazy. But the thing is, 2 weeks ago, or a little over that, when I was planning my last message about, you know, not being consumed by money, I was offered a job in another location. doing exactly what I want to be doing at a very exciting place, three times as much salary. The whole like weekly, monthly dance of trying to figure out how to, you know, pay our bills and not go further in debt, like that would have been solved. It was really, really tempting to say, yes, I can justify that. You call me to make disciples, right, God? I can make disciples over there. And the thing is that there was no sense of calling that Jesus was saying, that God was saying, yeah, I've called you to make disciples over there. And so it would have been, even though on paper I could have justified it, it would have been, you know, aligned with what I am, who God's made me to be, and what I've been trained to do and all these sorts of things. The decision would have come down to saying, having enough money every month is more important than where my treasure, my family, is called to be and invest and has been invested. And so the day after I preached 2 weeks ago, I wrote an email that made me a little sick to my stomach because I knew it was costing a lot to say no. But I did it. Because our treasure, my treasure, is called to be here right now. That's what we have to give. That's what we're giving. I don't know. I don't know what the future holds. We're still trusting for God's provision and all that kind of stuff. But so for me, I'm going to write, get my pen out. And I encourage you to do the same. You can have this, if you want to fill this out and have it be anonymous, that's fine. It's really okay. But the thing is, we didn't want to miss an opportunity. If you want to write your name down here and you want to, you know, write some commitment to how you're going to live generously, to get free, if you put your name and your email down here, you'll get like one follow-up email, just depending on where you're at, what some opportunities or just an encouragement, really. We're not tracking. We're not like going to increase our budget based on what you guys put. Like, none of that is true. And if you want, just leave this anonymous. That's fine. It really is. It's cool. But the thing is, like, all of the most important things in my life, I had to sign my name to, right? I hear when you buy a house, you have to sign your name. I wouldn't know. When I got married, though, the most important thing in my life, I had to sign my name. You make a purchase for some groceries, right? Swipe a card, sign your name. When I took out student loans, sign my name. Most of the things that matter, we seem to sign our names to. So if you're at a place where you feel like, you know what, I'm gonna do something that matters. And you know, the last one on here is I'm gonna pray intentionally and creatively for blank every day. If that's all you fill out, that matters. You may have walked in here today and just been hammered with this. Maybe that's where it is for you. Jesus' plan was always very, very clear, very simple. If you want to get free, if you want to be free from something that's controlling your life, you just give it away. If you're holding on much too tightly to your life, give it away. If you're holding on much too tightly of your money, give it away. biblical story is no different. I think of Abraham and Isaac and the, like, how could he possibly be willing to give up his son, right? He was willing to give it all up. I mean, that represented everything to Abraham. He was willing to give it up, and it all came back to him. So this morning, it's still morning, we're going to have a little bit of time. Some time for you to pray, to fill this out if you feel called to do that in some way, shape, or form. Nate's going to play a little bit. You can feel free to chat with a person, you know, next to you. So your decision might affect them. And then, if you want, if you filled it out in some way, if you open it up, you'll notice it just says, love. And really, that's what we're going after here, is to be a loving, generous people. So if you fill this out, you want to bring it up, we're just going to put it right here. On the altar, what we call an altar, representation of the altar. Just going to put it right there. And then we're going to share in this meal that we say is a representation of our oneness, of our community, of our identity as the family of God, as the body of Christ. Given for you and for me. You can come and take a chunk of the bread and dip it in the cup, which represents a new covenant. If you were here 2 weeks ago, I mentioned that you can have things, right? But they can't have you, because if you have accepted the gift, the grace of Jesus Christ, and you belong to God's family. The things of this world, the things that fight to consume you, they don't get to have you. We belong to each other. We belong to the family of God. We belong to Jesus Christ. The things of the world do not get to have us. So if you're willing to fill this out, this piece of paper out, and bring it up here and put it on the altar and then celebrate this meal and affirm the fact that you belong, we belong to Jesus. And you do that whenever you want. And I'm going to just kind of start us in prayer. And I encourage you to take a minute or two and fill out that form and